770-790. This is Money Talk with Don Soa on AM 790 WPRV.
And we welcome you to the Money Talk program, everybody. Welcoming you to a brand new week. And geez, I love to start out a brand new week on the right foot or the right market index. Stocks rose nicely today on a Monday as the major indices rebounded from one of their worst weekly performances we've seen in a couple of years. The Dow closed up over 400 points, about 410 actually. And actually shortly before, actually within that last hour of trading, it was up as high as like 540 points. But it always plays around at the end of the day. Most of the daily trading activity is between, say, 3, maybe 2:30 and 4 o'clock, that last 90 minutes. So it doesn't surprise me that you see really, really big swings. I'm just glad that with a big move where there seemed to be the general direction of the market most of the afternoon anyway, after lunchtime, was in the upwards direction, watching it break through new numbers, getting it through 300, then 400, then 500. And then I'm always thinking to myself, oh, yeah, but, you know, until that bell rings, you know, the number isn't solid. And actually, it's interesting, the settlement numbers sometimes take several minutes even after the market closes to actually kick in. So you see the direction the market is going in. But companies like American Express and Apple were the biggest and best performers today, rising about 4% on average, each of them. The S&P 500 gained 1.4%. Energy and financials as the best performing sectors there. Now, real estate was the worst performing sector as interest rates were climbing. So there's always that perception that, well, you know, higher cost of money means that there's more and more people who will be ineligible to actually take out a loan at the loan level that they would want. And that changes the fundamentals for the market in general. But you have to understand, it's all speculative moving forward because it's really not so much what the number is, but how high can it potentially go. I'm surprised that there wasn't more upside activity in the market today as interest rates have been rising, representing people who want to get in now while we still have historically low rates, you know, on these mortgages. But the NASDAQ advanced about 1.55%. Shares of Amazon, Bank America, and Apple, which fell sharply last week, all rose by at least 3%, and as I mentioned, Apple upwards of as high as 4% or higher. Now, the Dow and the S&P 500 both pulled back about 5.2% last week, not qualifying as a correction, but certainly as a meaningful pullback. And we oftentimes, even in the best of years, will have a number of pullbacks during the course of the trading year. The NASDAQ composite, in the meantime, dropped about 5.1%, marking its biggest one-week pullback since February of 2016, which was only a couple of years ago. The indexes also dipped into what we call correction territory from their overall highs. The 30-stock Dow closed more than 1,000 points lower, actually twice last week, and rose more than 300 points in two other trading days. So it's fairly inconsistent. Right now, we're no longer in correction territory for these, but they did break through us at a couple of points. The S&P 500, in the meantime, posted moves greater than 1% in four of five trading days last week. So it shows you what kind of volatility that we've been talking about here. Now, this all looks like a corrective phase rather than the start of a bear market. Actually, we've heard a number of analysts refer to it as a correction in a bull market correction, which is perfectly fine. The biggest risk to the market prior to this sell-off was actually sentiment. And we've seen that go from overly bullish to perhaps overly bearish. If we could just avoid the extremes, we'd probably be perfectly fine. But Katie Stockton, who is a founder over at Fairlead Strategies, she indicated it could take a few more weeks of up and down volatility until this particular phase that we're in, if you want to call it a phase, is actually over. But right now, people are happy. They're seeing the market moving in a direction that they're comfortable with. The major indexes closed out last week on a pretty high note, with the Dow rising 330 points on Friday. The S&P and the NASDAQ gained more than 1.4% in that time frame. And here, of course, on the Dow being up 410 today. So that means in just the 2 days, Friday and today, we're looking at about 740 points in a two-day period. Pretty good, not bad at all. But again, when you're looking at markets above 20,000, above 23,000, all of a sudden a move of 700, 800, even 1,000 points is not as meaningful as you might think. Now, the market's trying to bounce here, but we have the issue of bonds and bond yields climbing, and that in some cases tends to dampen enthusiasm. Investors have been on edge as of late over concerns surrounding higher interest rates. And the result is that moves in the bond market will continue to be sort of a key factor, a key importance going forward here. The benchmark 10-year U.S. note, that yields critical to a lot of other financial instruments in our economy. It rose to a four-year high on Monday before trading coming down to about 2.85%. But that's a fairly big move overall. Now, the latest move higher follows news that the White House will unveil a long-awaited infrastructure plan that includes about $200 billion in federal infrastructure spending over 10 years. And, of course, being that it's a $1.5 trillion infrastructure plan that the president is proposing, the remaining $1.3 trillion of that money is going to have to come from either private entities, private investment, or from the states and local governments. That puts an extraordinary burden on them. And, of course, that money has to be borrowed as well. So it's not just a question of what does $200 billion at the federal level do to interest rates potentially. It's also what does the remaining $1.3 trillion do when it's taken out even at the state and local levels. It's all the money has to be borrowed. So all of it's going to be pushed. All of that is going to push rates higher potentially. So it's the overall impact of what does all this activity do potentially to the economy. And right now, remember, a lot of the day-to-day volatility you're looking at right now is basically the emotional reaction to what does it all mean. We're all speculating about the good side of particular governmental agendas, as well as the bad side of those agendas. And we see volatility up and down on both sides. So it's no surprise that the agenda, the Trump agenda, will provide a great deal of fiscal stimulus, probably, also in line with the tax cuts that came in at the end of last year, in more spending, of course, on defense and infrastructure. According to Ed Yardeni, Yardeni is a chief investment strategist over at Yardeni Research, and he's indicated that the jury's still out on whether all that fiscal stimulus will actually revive inflation. But that's what they're worried about. They're worried that all of this, if you're providing programs that represent aggressive stimulus, if in a weak economy, the economy can absorb that well because there's a lot of upside movement, room for the markets to move, room for rates to move. But in a case like we're in right now, we're in a fairly robust economy with extremely low interest rates and low, the unemployment rate is very, very low. We're basically at full employment. What happens when you continue to push aggressive stimulus into a market like this? The end result historically could be, or has been, inflation, and could be hyperinflation. And why is that bad? Well, that's a different story. But you can imagine that when the cost of goods and services within the economy go up substantially, then especially for people living on fixed incomes, it can be problematic. The only people on that side that benefit is those maybe fixed income individuals who may be investing in bank CDs or money markets. We may see some upward adjustment in the rates that you can get on a CD or a money market. But remember, that kind of move, that kind of adjustment happens very, very slowly. So the jury's going to be out on whether all this fiscal stimulus will revive inflation. They don't think so. A great many analysts that I've been looking to and listening to don't think so, or at least not a problematic one. They think that rates will go up slowly in an incremental fashion, so it's not an aggressive move on this. But there's a group out there called Bond Vigilantes, and they're all kind of saddling up. Yardetti also said that the firm raised its 218 forecast on the 10-year yield. He thinks it's going to finish the year at some point in the 3 to 3.5% range. Folks, you're listening to the Money Talk program, talking to you about what's been happening in this really wild ride. This market is a little bit more like a rodeo than it is like Wall Street. But we'll chat some more. We'll give you some more interesting information and ideas and tell you how the market compares to past periods in time that you may or may not be familiar with. We'll share some of the historic perspectives with you here on the Money Talk program. I'm Don Sowa. I'll be right back.
Sponsored by United States Traffic Network. Looking to add your talent to a dynamic company? United States Traffic Network seeks a motivated account executive to join the sales team. Send your resume to ustrafficnetwork.com/careers.
Hi, this is Jerry at Auto Rust Tech. 30 years ago, I created a custom body shop that specializes in repairing cars and trucks with rust damage so people could get extended life from their vehicles. Typical work going on at Auto Rust Tech might be Mike welding up frames and floors for state inspections and fixing a shock mount that busted off, Herman's rebuilding a classic muscle car with new body panels, and Peter's repairing a front engine support that rusted away and restoring a Toyota Corolla so it can pass state inspections and be made safe again. Up front, Carrie is welding up a Mopar frame kit, and Tito sandblasts and undercoats an old Ford pickup and rust-proofs a new car. Auto Rust Tech has a highly skilled workforce that can make your car or truck safe again and guarantee it for years. Call us at our crazy phone number, 944-4444, or visit our website at autorust.com. Free estimates are done Monday through Saturday, 8 till noon at 275 Niantic Avenue in Cranston, Rhode Island. That's Auto Rust Tech, 944-4444. Try to forget that phone number.
Does your dog itch, scratch, stink, or shed like crazy? Come to Dynavite for help.
Order a 90-day supply of Dynavite.
Dynavite is nutrition.
Pick up two bottles of LicoChops, get the third bottle free.
New improved LicoChops with omega-3, omega-6, vitamin E.
And now, six extra direct-fed microbials.
Even better for the digestive tract and immune system.
Try LicoChops. Buy two, get one free.
At Dynavite.com.
Dynovite.com.
People make your business work. But how do you find the right talent? ZipRecruiter. One click, post your job to over 100 top job boards. Then, smart matching technology instantly alerts quality candidates about your job. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
To try ZipRecruiter for free, just go to ZipRecruiter.com/free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free.
We first opened about 10 years ago. We were small, just a few of us, but it was exciting. I always dreamt of having my own business. It was kind of slow at first, but things started picking up. We had big plans, but in our wildest dreams, we never thought we'd have this much work. Yeah, with so many businesses caught off guard by the storm, Reed Waste Management has never been busier.
What will become of your business after a disaster? Nearly two-thirds of businesses aren't prepared for an emergency, and 40% of businesses that experience a disaster never recover. Make an emergency plan now before it's too late. For a free online tool that helps you develop an emergency plan to keep your business up and running should disaster strike, visit ready.gov/business. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the American Red Cross, and the Ad Council.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we welcome you back to tonight's Money Talk program. I am Don Sowa, delighted to have you here with me on during your drive time home. If you're in a safe place, in other words, you're not out there driving on the Wampanoag Trail or in 95, 195, feel free to give us a call. Yeah, Maya's here. She's taking calls locally at 437-5000, 437-5000, and a toll-free number if you're outside the immediate area at 888-345-0790. If you are in a place where you can chat because you have a question that needs follow-up potentially, and it is a safe place, let her know that. Rather than just plugging your question into my screen and me attempting to answer it before you reach your destination, I will actually try to engage you directly. We'll try to show some respect for your time and get to you directly and try to give you some input on maybe some of those very important decisions that you're making right now. The stock market, what does it look like? I mean, it seems to me that the stock market tends to trigger what we call a search for parallels. I was reading an article by a guy named Greg Ipp, a writer for the Wall Street Journal, and he said that that was an interesting question. He says you get it all the time now. Well, so is this like back in the crash of 08 that we had, that probably the more recent movement of the market, where the market, depending upon how you were invested, could have been down anywhere from 30% to 45%. And some people claim that depending on how aggressive they were invested, that they could have been down as much as 50%. But no, the previous periods was the bear market of 2001 and 2. The end of that market would have been in the late 90s. And then, of course, it was the crash of 87, which some of you who are listening to this may only have heard about it, but not quite sure what that was. But that was a Friday and a Monday in October. They called it Black Friday, Black Monday. That was an interesting period, in a 2-day trading period, the market lost almost 23% of its value. Very, very fast. Qualified numerically as a bear market because it dropped more than 20%. But in my opinion, a bear market should reflect a trend, a period. In other words, market behavior, individual investor behavior over a period of time. Somehow two days just doesn't qualify, in my opinion. But that's okay. It was a pretty traumatic event for anyway. So people ask, are we in a period that's similar to any of these? Now, people suggest, hey, if you don't study history, you're doomed to repeat the same mistakes you made before. But by the same token, most of us, as well as the regulators in our field, try to warn the public that, you know, please don't use past performance as some sort of guarantee for future performance. It's not that guarantee. There's too many factors that go into market behavior. Why? Because it's not a stock market. It's a people market. I've said it many times. It's people making decisions about their money to either buy or sell at any given time based on how they feel. And folks, when you're dealing with people's feelings, you know how unpredictable that can be. But either way, regardless of what period it was more like, 99, 98, or 87, it can be nerve-wracking. It can be frightening. But, you know, as frightening as it could be, it has very little lasting economic consequence. That's the whole point. Or was it more like I said, the more recent event, 2007 and 8, which was a recession as well as a bear market? Several failed hedge funds and subprime lenders, they were the tipping point of a highly leveraged iceberg that really sank, you know, really the effect was on the overall economy. Money just froze up. Main Street was very highly illiquid. And government's big problem was that even the major banks, major money lenders were not feeling comfortable or in a position to lend money out. So not only did Wall Street freeze up, but so did Main Street. And actually, Main Street's all over the world. It became a global event. But right now, the right analogies probably exclude certain periods. And they certainly probably exclude the 07, 2007, 2008 timeframe, which is our most recent one. Many of you may say, geez, I was an investor during this most recent timeframe, so I remember it. They probably would be something a little bit more maybe akin to maybe 1987 or perhaps the 98, 99 timeframe, the end of the dot-com bubble. Both cases, when some market players were clobbered, but unlike in 2007, had linkages to the real economy. It was in 1987, as now, there were fears of a weak dollar, the fears of rising bond prices in 87. Inflation was just as a new Federal Reserve chairman was coming in, Alan Greenspan at the time. It was all determined to prove his credentials at the time. So there were a lot of nervous analogies, and guess what's happening right now? We got a brand-new Fed chairman that was just brought in, Chairman Powell. He'll be speaking in the next couple of weeks. We'll get to hear his words for the first time to find out what he's concerned on as our outgoing chairman, Janet Yellen, goes into her version of retirement, I guess. Congress was also mulling a big tax change to discourage leveraged corporate buyouts, a big driver of that year's bull market at the time. But these were merely catalysts. They were not specific. They didn't necessarily cause things, but they contributed to the environment that we were in. The driver of the October 19th, 1987 crash of 87 was really what we call portfolio insurance, which is a strategy that effectively forced big investors to sell into a falling market. A 1998 Russia's debt default was probably one of the catalysts that forced long-term capital management, very large investment firm, hedge fund, to suffer massive losses as it liquidated its positions to cover its loss obligations. The Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped about 19%, and other market prices went haywire as a result, such as the difference in the yields between nearly identical treasury bonds. But a very strong U.S. expansion did, in fact, continue. By contrast, in 2007, the failure of hedge funds operated by companies like Bear Stearns and steep losses on subprime mortgages loans, such as at HSBC Holdings, turned out to be symptoms, not the cause of the actual problem. Trillions of dollars of shoddily underwritten mortgages backed by soon-to-collapse housing prices, much of it held by banks in relatively what we call opaque, not completely transparent instruments that were out there. That was sort of at the center of what the problem was. And another thing was that a large number of these highly sophisticated institutions that owned hundreds of billions of dollars of these assets were highly leveraged. They were allowed under the investment acts that, you know, control risk. They were allowed to leverage out several times where you and I might, in a margin account, be allowed to borrow 2-to-1, use maybe $100,000 of our own capital and borrow 100 against it. So it's a 2-to-1 leveraged position or margin position. That was a more conservative type of leveraging arrangement than happened back in the 20s and the 30s. So back in 1929, when the market crashed, people could have leveraged as much as 10-to-1 back in that era. But, you know, the market believed, and I guess even the regulators felt relatively comfortable, letting big institutions who are highly sophisticated, big trading firms on Wall Street, hedge funds globally around the world, they allowed them to take fairly substantial leverage positions. So when all of a sudden the underlying instruments, these opaque subprime-type mortgages and other unique instruments like credit default swaps, another name for another type of lending instrument, when they started to, there were questions about their honest value in the open market. When they tried to mark them to market, they found difficulties with the pricing, and the regulators stepped in to try to create some level of surety in them, and the end result was create massive losses for these highly leveraged hedge funds and other types of investors. I know it all sounds really complicated, but the point is it's a very different market based upon unique instruments. And we always ask ourselves, many of the rules, the regulations that have followed since that time, including some of the elements of Dodd-Frank and some of which many have been criticized by the current Trump administration for being overly restrictive regulatory instruments. But there was a reason these regulatory instruments were created, because of the lack of regulation and lack of thoughtful input that went into the creation of these vehicles. So the latest sell-off was triggered by worries that central banks would respond to stirrings of inflation with more rapid interest rate increases. That's what's happening here. That's part of what you looked at in the news the last couple of weeks. That, however, was merely the spark, not the general problem. The fuel was a market belief implemented but in complex trades, of course, that a period of low market volatility would actually persist out here. So there's a late economist, a guy named Hyman Minsky. He once said that stability is destabilizing. Long periods of calm encourage risk. Taking that aggravates the eventual bust, because we're so calm. We're lulled into a false sense of security. In other words, stocks and bonds have been unusually docile over the past decade or so, in part because central banks have been so determined to meet each economic threat and decline in stocks also with more monetary stimulus. Very accommodative Fed policy. So, yes, the Federal Reserve has been at the center of driving our stock market since the bear market and the recession of 07 and 08 and in the decade that has followed. Been a great period to be an investor. The question we can have is, will it continue? Well, we'll talk about that here on the Money Talk program. You're listening to AM 790, your home of talk and business. This is Money Talk, and I'm Don Soa. I'll be right back.
Hi, this is Sarah Bain, head coach of the Brown Bears women's basketball team. Join us for our game Saturday, February 24th at 4 p.m. as we take on Ivy League rival Cornell. This is our last regular season game of the year, so please help us pack the Pizzatola Center as we make our run to the Ivy League tournament.
Pull up three is good. She knew it
that
when she let it go.
The Brown versus Cornell women's game is presented by Alex and Ani. Visit brownbears.com for game and ticket information.
Atlantis Comfort, 233-2600.
Call Atlantis Comfort Systems and ask about their $89 heating system tune-up special. As a Mitsubishi Electric Cooling and Heating Diamond Contractor, Atlantis Comfort Systems provides a whole home comfort solution with unmatched energy efficiency, performance, and control to cooling and heating.
Atlantis Comfort, 233-2600.
If you're a parent, listen closely to the voices of meningitis.
On Tuesday, Becky was sick. On Wednesday, she was gone.
I was there for my son's first breath and his last.
The infection spread so fast.
David got it when he was 13.
Terry was only 5.
Tyler lost fingers.
My kidneys.
Both feet. Moved so fast.
Both of my legs.
Lost his life.
I thought it was a virus.
What happened?
10 toes are now 9.
In just a single day, she was gone.
My son did not have to die.
The role of a parent is to protect.
Parents need to know.
Parents need to know.
Preteens and teens
are at greater risk.
Talk to your child's health care provider.
We are the voices of meningitis.
Join school nurses and families nationwide by adding your voice. Meningococcal meningitis may be rare, but it's often devastating. You can help prevent it. Get preteens and teens vaccinated. The National Association of School Nurses urges you to talk to your child's school nurse or health care provider. And visit voicesofmeningitis.org.
Hear that? That's the sound of safety and the sound of your family's belongings staying where they belong. In times like these, it's important to know how to protect your home, your family, and your valuables. A good strong lock on a solid door and frame can make a huge difference. Most burglars will spend no longer than a minute trying to break in. That's only as long as this radio announcement. Remember to lock your doors and windows. Even the best locks can't protect you unless you use them. Install bright outdoor lighting. If you have an alarm system, use it. And post signs that say your home has an alarm. Trim bushes and trees so your house is clearly visible to your neighbors and your street. If you ever return home to find that someone is broken in, do not enter. Call the police immediately. To learn more on how to keep your home and family safe, visit ncpc.org. That's ncpc.org. Let's all work together to keep our homes safe and sound. A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we welcome you to the second half of tonight's Money Talk program. This is Don Sowa. Thanks for joining me. In the first half of the show, I was talking a little bit about some of the environment that was in existence at the time of past major market declines, whether it's a bear market or whether it's the crash of 87, as they called it. We were looking at different environments, but we noted that in this recent period of time, especially over the last like 9 or 10 years, even though the market never tends to go up in a completely straight line, but for the most part, this last decade was pretty dependable, pretty stable. And I think it was because of that. That's the concern when people look at this recent volatility. They said, well, among the what drove some of this? So, I mean, the idea that the market can drop, you know, over 1,000 points in a day and then, you know, have a big swing to the upside again. And, you know, in an environment where it seems like the economy is pretty solid, you know, and that means that the fundamentals that support the stock market should be pretty solid. But, you know, we get lulled into a false sense of security, and investors, believe it or not, are very clever, always thinking of new programs, new products, new strategies to take advantage of whatever environment they're in. In other words, as somebody once said, there's always a way to make money somehow, no matter what the economy or the market is doing. Well, investors devise some strategies that are intended to exploit the low level of volatility that we've been experiencing. They've actually found themselves betting that the VIX, which is the market volatility barometer using options prices derived from options, they felt that the VIX would stay low. You know, as those bets grew, they in turn dampened volatility further. Also, a play where risk parity trades that use borrowed money, it's like a margin account leveraging, borrowed money to take larger positions. Leverage, you sometimes hear the term a leveraged exchange-traded fund or a leveraged mutual fund. These are mutual funds where the managers of the fund are allowed to borrow money against assets that are already in the account, thus magnifying the potential upside or profitability of any movement that is made within the portfolio. But, of course, they can be sophisticated. They can be portfolios that are intended to go up, which would be a long portfolio using leverage. And if the account were to, it was leveraged 3-to-1, say, and the account were to go up a little over 3%, then that 3% move in a 3x leveraged portfolio would give you a 10% return. And it could be even more than that, obviously. If you get a 10% move, maybe you get a 30% return. But some of these funds are designed to work the other direction, actually intended to make money using short trading and the purchase of certain types of options instruments like puts, which actually are designed to make money if the market goes down. And also they can magnify that potential opportunity through leverage. But you are also, and this is the thing we have to emphasize dramatically, when you hear about these leveraged portfolios, they are also magnifying the risk equally. So the concept of risk and reward is magnified. Evercore ISI, which is a brokerage, estimates more than $2 trillion may be invested in these types of very unique strategies. Now, once volatility started to rise, though, so you have these instruments here that are sort of gambling that the volatility will stay low or even get lower. So they're gambling on, they're making investment decisions based on that. Well, what happens when volatility goes up? Those strategies are going to, because they're leveraged multiple times, they're going to sustain some very, very steep declines in value, losses. And as they closed out some of those positions or reduced borrowing, volatility spiked even more. So even the efforts that they made to minimize their own risk as risk became apparent, those efforts magnified the volatility. Like in 1987 and in 1998, these types of moves are sort of self-reinforcing. It's like a snowballing effect. As positions are liquidated, they force prices to levels that inflict losses on other players within the market, forcing them to liquidate. The market is, there are sometimes what we call algorithmic trading programs. The programs that buy and sell when the market hits certain key levels. They hit the level, and again, it triggers a buy or a sell. In this case, sells. Such selling eventually burns itself out, though it's impossible to predict exactly what the timing of that would be. The low volatility of the last 18 months allowed for massive accumulation of risk exposure in these types of vehicles, according to the strategists over at Nomura Securities. That was a recent letter written by Charlie McElligott, who's one of their analysts and strategists. If volatility remains high, he said, that could trigger waves of selling by funds following investment rules linked to volatility. Now, in 1987 and 1998, this sort of forced selling was just a temporary detour for the markets. And, of course, this could be a repeat of that. A lot of people hope, as I do, I'm not just convincing myself that this has nothing to do with the fundamentals. According to a number of fund managers, they're looking at not only this program trading in computer systems, and as well as these highly leveraged and unusual trading instruments, these clever instruments that are designed to take advantage of either high or low volatility. In this case, it's supposed to work with the low. But the market usually is driven by fundamentals, economic issues, how strong is the economy, how strong is the employment issue, what kind of earnings growth can corporations expect moving forward. Those numbers, those types of that kind of reality has been pretty good for the market, but it's also a part of it. So we're seeing an environment where both fundamentals are important. You have to pay attention to them. They do affect markets. If the fundamentals are strong, then this type of downside volatility can be mitigated. It won't be as severe. You have to pay attention to both sides, in other words. But I still think there is some volatility out there. You have to pay attention. Now, even if the inflation concern is overdone, events have clearly shifted the bond market's mood. Right now, bond prices have been moving quite a bit higher, driven by the market itself. The Federal Reserve hasn't increased rates this year so far. We expect that they will at some point using the Fed fund rate, but we haven't seen much of that at this point. But the market itself has pressures internally that drive bond prices higher. Now, bond investors worry about low unemployment levels, which is very close to full employment, not enough workers to fill all the jobs, and that pushes salaries higher. Now, on some levels, that's good, but remember, corporations are forced and companies are forced to increase the cost of their goods and services, pass through right to consumers in order to pay the higher salaries that their employees require in this kind of an environment. We haven't seen a lot of that kind of, payroll, style pressure up to this point. But where, there's concerns about that, and they're valid concerns. We've seen it happen in past history. That, along with, of course, the U.S. budget deficits, all the conversations here, the topic over $1 trillion looking forward, and central banks shrinking their bond holdings, that would push bond prices down and yields up. Remember, the United States, whatever the government says, when you listen to the arguments coming out of Washington, D.C. about certain programs, I mean, there are people within the Republican Party that want to support a great many of the program priorities that the president has, but there are also what we call budget hawks inside the Republican Party. Many are part of the, what we call now the Freedom Caucus, originally the Tea Party, who are saying, yeah, fine, these things are all great programs, but show me how you're going to pay for them. They're more concerned. They're what you call fiscal conservatives. And they are very, very concerned about the amount of debt that the nation takes on, and with the understanding that the economy has to support that debt. And remember, the more debt we take on, the higher the level that debt service, in other words, the interest that we pay on that debt, the higher the level that debt service has as a piece of the overall budget pie. The bigger that piece that is just for interest payments, then the less money we have for other programs, whether it's the military, whether it's infrastructure spending, whether it's the health care programs that are out there, or education. The nation can be strangled if you take on too much debt. And right now, Donald Trump, even during his campaign, indicated that he has no fear of debt whatsoever. And some of the recommendations he's been making, some of which sound good, but they do demonstrate that this is a person who has very little respect for the concerns that that the debt hawks and deficit hawks would have in this case. He's not concerned about how much money the nation borrows. He thinks we can outgrow it. That's a questionable strategy, and only time, I guess, will support that. But that's one of the reasons that the president's battling with his own party. Monetary policy is also a question mark. We had a pretty strong sense of what Janet Yellen was going to do. She was our past Fed chair. One hedge fund manager said, we don't know what Jerome Powell, our new Fed chair, is going to do. Although many people said that he is cut from the same philosophical policy cloth that Janet Yellen was. But, and she, of course, came from the Ben Bernanke School of Economics. Although Mr. Powell hasn't really addressed this market turmoil yet in any of his speeches, he just got sworn in. Since being sworn in as chairman, which was literally last Monday, his colleagues have actually played it down. Yeah, even welcomed it a little bit. A little more volatility in the markets is okay, they say. Can be sort of a healthy thing, according to Dallas Fed Chair Bob Kaplan. Now, that may be true, but coming from a central banker, it sounds sort of complacent, even complicit, which could compound investors' inclination to pull back a little bit, become a little bit nervous about what they don't know. Now, as investors are reassessing the risk of inflation in higher interest rates, bond yields and volatility could grind higher, which would, of course, put some pressure on the stock valuations that are out there. Even if profits look pretty good, the cost of money moving higher can put some pressure on profitability at the corporate level. And, of course, that also puts pressure on stock prices. Eventually, market moves don't just reflect the economy. They could also drive the economy in some cases. The turmoil back in 87 and 98 and the 2007-2008 period, they inflicted damaging losses on market participants that really required intervention by the Federal Reserve at some level. Post-crisis reforms actually have strengthened the financial system, but volatility may expose some weak links in there. When the dot-com bubble burst in 2000, that sapped spending by wealthy stockholders in tech companies who could no longer issue bonds or shares at that particular time or raise money. And that was kind of problematic, I would think. Hey, folks, you're listening to the Money Talk program. I'm going to take a quick break here before we do our last segment. I'm Don Sowa, and we'll be right back.
Sponsored by Tax Doctor. Owe the IRS $10,000 or more? Call the Tax Doctor to settle tax debt for less. 800-542-9112. 800-542-9112.
Amanda, age 3. Tyler, age 8. Marissa, age 4.5.
We could tell you just how many child abductions last year led to Amber Alerts.
Shaniqua, age 14. Ryan, age 9.
But this isn't about cold statistics. It's about saving kids.
Terrell and Jamal, age 6 months.
Please go to wirelessamberalerts.org. Sign up to get free Amber Alert text messages on your cell phone. When an Amber Alert is issued in the areas you've chosen, you'll receive a free text message. If you spot the vehicle, the suspect, or the child described in the alert, call 911. Sign up today for free at wirelessamberalerts.org. You can imagine what the family of an abducted child is feeling.
Alexander, age 7.
If you actually did help save that child, just imagine what that would feel like. WirelessAmberAlerts.org. A child is calling for help. This message brought to you by the Wireless Foundation, the U.S. Department of Justice, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and the Ad Council.
Does your dog itch, scratch, stink, or shed like crazy? Come to Dynavite for help.
Order a 90-day supply of Dynavite.
Dynavite is nutrition.
Pick up 2 bottles of LicoChops. Get the 3rd bottle free.
New improved LicoChops. With omega-3, omega-6, vitamin E.
And now, 6 extra direct-fed microbials.
Even better for the digestive tract and immune system.
Try LicoChops. Buy 2, get 1 free.
At Dynavite.com.
DINOVITE.com.
People make your business work. But how do you find the right talent? ZipRecruiter. One click, post your job to over 100 top job boards. Then, smart matching technology instantly alerts quality candidates about your job. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
To try ZipRecruiter for free, just go to ZipRecruiter.com/free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free.
This is Money Talk with Don Soa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And I welcome you back to the last segment of tonight's program. Usually when I come into the last segment of the show, we like to offer something that's sort of based generic with some information that we think everybody could probably use. And even if it's not a particular piece or statistic or piece of information that you need personally, because it may deal with an issue you're already familiar with, it may be something that you could use to pass on to somebody else that you care about. I'm looking out there for those of us who are listeners who are seniors themselves or maybe baby boomers who have adult children of their own. Some of this information I would hope would be very, very valuable for mom or dad to give to their adult sons and daughters as they're starting their families and starting their lives. And starting what I personally believe, my great fear, is that the world that you and I, us being in our late 50s or 60s or older, the year that we're leaving, the world we're leaving behind to our children, our adult children and grandchildren, is going to be far more challenging for our children, for them, than the world that we've inherited from our parents, often known as the greatest generation, the World War II generation. Baby boomers, yes, it's a challenge, and I'm not trying to minimize that. I'm just letting you know that there are just some things you have to think about. And what I have learned, I mean, one thing the baby boomers did is that some of the tools and strategies that we have, the financial products that are available to us today, were not available to my parents' generation until they got quite a bit older. Things that, you know, things like IRAs and Roth IRAs and 403Bs and 401k plans sponsored by your companies. These things, believe it or not, are relatively new innovations, new inventions of the baby boomer generation. But many of us were already well into our working years in our family lifestyles and not accustomed to funding these vehicles or putting money aside. And if we did start using them, many times we started using them quite late. Encouraging your children to start using them when they first get their jobs is very important. Understanding what it costs to retire. According to a Merrill Lynch report called Age Wave, they reported that 81% of Americans really don't know how much money they're actually going to need to retire. They've never really thought about it. If they did think about it, they haven't looked into the details of it. And remember, I suppose the number is going to be a little bit unique to each individual, but there are some averages. There's some there's some statistics out there that all of you can use to give you some sense of maybe where you stand or just how big the problem is. More than a little problematic, because if you don't know how much you'll need, you can't know if you're actually saving enough. I was looking at an article from one of my favorite newsletters, The Motley Fool. Yes, I'm one of those motley fools myself, I guess. But they provide it awful. I don't agree with everything they say in there, but that's all right, because there's enough that I do agree with that it's a helpful tool. I guess how much money is going to be different, as I mentioned, for different people. But we'll take a look at some of the average numbers. The same report from Merrill Lynch, which noted retirement is the most expensive purchase most people will ever make in their lives. It's the most expensive goal that you'll ever have. They found that the average cost of retirement, again, the average, is $738,000. Compared to other very large goals, college education, the average cost is $83,400. Raising a child to age 18, the average cost is around $245,000. The average cost of a home in this country, average again, $278,000. And again, the average cost of retirement will be somewhere in and around $738,000. Now, remember, these are just averages, and each item could cost a little bit more, could cost less, a little bit less, probably will. If you use the roughly 4% rule as a guide, and some people argue that, you know, you have to reevaluate the 4% rule from time to time as the years go by and the economy changes, you'll get a sense that with $738,000, you're going to earn about $30,000 of income from that. That's in the very first year you retire. Now, if you can earn through the way you invest slightly more than that, let's say you're targeting your average annual return over time in retirement at, say, 5 or 5.5%, with an expectation of drawing out four as income, then you're going to start out with about $30,000. And the nice thing is, again, these are average numbers. There's no one guaranteed year, certainly. But while you're pulling out 4% from your investment plan, you have to have the discipline to leave the other 1.5% you're earning. If you're able to earn between, say, 5 and 6%, that 5.5%, that 1.5% net amount you allow to compound and grow over time. That will, if you do so successfully over time, and again, we reevaluate these rules, these metrics over time, then you're going to increase the principal enough from 738 up to 750, up to 780, up to 800,000. Imagine over time, because remember, you're going to be retired for a very, very long time. That increases, if you still take the 4% out, you are periodically giving yourself a raise. And I'd say every 3 years or so, you're going to have to look at the cost of living and realize that $30,000 isn't going as far as it did once before. Now, in addition to that $30,000, you look at other dependable sources of income. The average annual Social Security, again, the average benefit of the United States is right around $17,000 a year. So if that was the amount you were going to receive, if you and your spouse, your partner, each have a Social Security benefit, then perhaps you can increase these numbers. But with one benefit at that level, that gets you up to about $47,000, $48,000 a year of income to live on in retirement. Now, this also behooves you, obviously, if you're making plans, to pay down as you get older as much debt as you reasonably can. And yes, it does. It is an advantage to you, especially as you get closer and closer to your chosen retirement date, to eliminate expensive debt, especially like credit cards, and even get out from underneath that mortgage if at all possible. It'd be nice to have that residential cost, limit your residential cost to maintenance, taxes, and utilities. Now, the report that we're looking at cites some other troubling numbers. While the mean percentage of income that people think they should be saving for retirement is probably, when you look at it, ultimately it's going to be between 15 and 25%. The percentage of income that they actually are socking away, probably, again, on average, is between 5 and 6%, not really enough. Only 15% of pre-retirees have tried to estimate how much money they might actually need for some of the difficult and unmeasurable costs like health care and long-term care in retirement. While life expectancy at birth in America has gone from the mid-60s in 1950, we expected people to live to their mid-60s. It's gone up to the 80s easily now. The average retirement age has fallen during the period from around 70 to an average of about 63. People are, in other words, not working as long as they once did on average, and they've shortened it up for whatever reason. The disparity in savings is really a problem, because for most people, socking away only 5 or 6% of their income isn't going to help fund a particularly comfortable retirement. Now, you can mitigate some of that if that's the amount you're contributing, say, to a company plan that matches your contribution. If they match 50 cents on the dollar up to 6%, which is sort of a kind of an average, then maybe instead of putting in 5 or 6%, you're having about an amount equal to 9% of your pay going away. That gets you closer to what you need to do, but you need to do better. Those who start saving later in life, of course, need to save a lot more also. That's a bigger problem. Ignoring health care costs is another major blunder because health care is expensive. A 65-year-old couple retiring today will spend, on average, a total of about $275,000 out of pocket on health care. That's according to Fidelity. Medicare can be a great help in retirement, but it won't wipe out all of your out-of-pocket expenses. You're probably, as you get closer to age 65, when you're going to actually file for Medicare, sit down with people who know what they're doing, people who could talk to you about the Medigap programs that United Healthcare and Blue Cross and others make available to seniors. It's going to cost you a little bit of money, but Medicare is going to cover some of the primary bills, Part A and Part B, things that you really need. But there's a lot of other copays and a number of other expenses that they don't cover, including prescription care. It behooves you to actually pay some premium dollars to have good care for what can be very expensive programs. In the meantime, if people are living longer and retiring earlier, that means that they're ending up with significantly longer retirements. The money you have has got to last a very long time. With retirements typically, starting around 63, life expectancy over 85, and those who have made it to 65 years old, a very common retirement duration is about 22 to 25 years. I mean, that's problematic. Now, if you're among those who don't know how much money they need for retirement or who don't really think that they will have enough money, what should you do? Well, fortunately, you're probably not doomed. There are many ways to actually generate more income in retirement. We'll be talking about it here on the Money Talk program going forward. This is a good time when the markets get to this point to know what, if any, adjustments you should be making in your planning with amounts, as well as strategies moving forward, whether you should be aggressive or conservative. It's all going to be unique to you in the time period we're in. Hey, folks, I'm Don Sowa. Tune in tomorrow. Donna Allard will be here with me for Get Back to Basics Money Talk right here on AM 790. In the meantime, you have a good evening.
I'm Jay Farner from Quicken Loans. The rate today on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 4.375.